Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. Idea Talks is a monthly conversation with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. For more information on this podcast and others, visit joshtice.com.
Are you getting fired up and fueled up? There are a lot of conferences for pastors that give inspiration and motivation to fire you up about doing ministry. But as I travel around the country and talk with pastors, I find many pastors are motivated to their calling. What they are wanting is practical ideas to fuel that calling. What if there was a conference that could get you fired up and fueled up? I want to invite you to Idea Day, a day designed by pastors for pastors with one purpose, ideas. Pastor Josh Tice and his team at Southern Hills Baptist Church have created an experience that feels more like a conversation than a conference. At Idea Day, you will be invited to learn ideas from other pastors while contributing ideas that have worked well for your church. You will get and give practical ideas about leadership, financing for your church, taking the next step in church growth, even ideas for facilitating small groups that are effective. Don't miss this incredible day that will fire you up and fuel your ministry tank.
Welcome to episode 38 of the Idea Talks. Hey, we have Chris back in the studio today.
Hey, it's good to be back.
Welcome, Chris Owens. For those who don't know, this is a follow-up episode, isn't it, Drew?
That it is.
Yeah. Two episodes ago, we did one, episode 36. It was called The Essential Doctrines of Idea Day and the Idea Day Network. So what was that one about?
So basically, a few people got together and created a confessional statement, so to speak, for the Idea Day Network. So in other words, why we believe certain things, and like if you believe these things, you might align with our cause as well.
One of the things that hopefully changes in the future is that Idea Day Network is so permanently associated with me, right? In that if Josh's Idea Day is Josh Tice, and hopefully that grows beyond that and others can help with that. Why do I say that? Because some people will look and they'll say, well, boy, look at Josh. I mean, he's so laid back about everything. There probably is no theological statement that they would hold to at all. And the answer is, if it were just me, maybe. But there is a group of people that have come about and have said, no, there is a set of fundamental doctrine that we all hold to. And that doesn't mean if you attend an Idea Day, you agree with everything. Doesn't mean if you've ever been to one you may disagree with some of those things we talked about in episode 36. But we are saying in episode 36, this is where the Idea Day Network as a whole really does stand. And that's why it was boiled down to only 2.5 pages. Speak to the brevity of our confession, Chris.
All right. The confession is basically to help people understand the fundamental truths of the Idea Day Network. All right, these are the things that are important to us, and we're probably not gonna wander very far from these statements if we wander from them at all.
That's the whole concept of a confession.
Yeah, and at the same time, it helps people understand. Okay, these are things that I believe, that they believe, and so therefore, even though they don't touch on every area, even though they don't touch on every topic, I can be part of this, and I can go, and I can ultimately, what Idea Day was created for, get some good ideas and methodology and have really good, interesting theological discussions in the meantime.
Right. I can have some friends there. I can get some ideas. I can realize, okay, these people also believe in the Trinity the way I do. Mm-hmm. These people also believe in baptism the way I do. These people also believe in the doctrine of salvation the way I do. Okay, so it's safe. Mm-hmm. And I can trust these people on these. Now, would your doctrinal statement maybe be 10 pages. Sure, the one for our church is a bit longer than the one it is for Idea Day Network, mm-hmm. but this is not a local church. This is a network of ministers, pastors, and churches that have come together for the purpose of sharing ideas. And so it's going to be a little bit broader and therefore a little bit shorter.
Yeah, and at the same time, as we mentioned, I think in the last episode, we've implemented something called theological roundtables. And a lot of these things that are outside of this confession have been dealt with. Yeah, we've talked about, you know, this Idea Day confession, but at the same time, we've been able to talk about other things and have really good conversations. And honestly, a lot of the things that are left out of here have been done so because you You cannot take the Bible with absolute 100% dogmatic accuracy and say this is what you should believe or what you should think.
Yeah.
This confession is something that will bind us together and help us understand, absolutely, okay, I can fellowship with these people. And at the same time, if it's not in there, it's because, well, there's some gray areas that the Bible just doesn't seem to give us absolute concrete answers
on. Or there's some areas that I totally agree on this, and this is what I believe, but you don't. Mm-hmm. But because we agree on these fundamental things, we can still get together. And you just referenced, you kind of gave a shout out and a commercial for the future Idea Days, because a lot of our Idea Days have gone from just methodology and even philosophy. We begin talking about theological stuff at our theological roundtables, mm-hmm, and that's the area we go into. So at our theological roundtables, we're not discussing whether or not Jesus is deity.
Oh, exactly.
Or whether or not Jesus was born of a virgin. No, yeah, we've already got that in our confessional.
Right.
Then what are we discussing? Well, we're discussing areas that didn't make the cut, doctrines that didn't make the cut into our, but are still interesting and still have big ramifications and still are fascinating. And so we're sitting at a round table, nothing more boring than a theological discussion with 30 people who agree 100% with, mm-hmm, you. And so what we've done is we've created not only a confession, we've created then a large tent where people are going to come in and say, oh, you know what? We do a little disagree on some bibliology aspects. We do disagree a little bit on our aspects of eschatology and ecclesiology. And so then we'll have a theological roundtable that talks about, for example, church government.
Mm-hmm.
What does the Bible say about church government? Well, you're elder led, and we're more single elder led, and you're more congregational, and you have a plurality of elders. This is something that can be discussed and is discussed at Idea Days.
Mm-hmm. And that's okay. That's okay if you have differing views concerning church government and all of those different things. The ultimate, we get together with everyone understanding, okay, this is what a church is. It's a, yeah, congregation,
yeah,
of baptized believers who has a specific purpose in why we're getting together,
right,
and the mission that God has given to us. When we arrive there, we can have good, fun conversations about church government and how we should be led, and they can be spirited. And at the same time, when they're over, hey, we can all still be friends.
We can still go to Denny's. We can still be friends. We can, exactly, still have waffles together. Can you tell I'm very hungry?
Yeah, it's getting late.
So let's talk about the doctrines that didn't make the cut. Fascinating to discuss, probably at a future Idea Day. By the way, you talked about future Idea Days. We've got some coming up. The Idea Nights are coming up here in only a few months, which is pretty exciting. August the 20th, you're going to want to sign up. You've already been hearing a lot about it. Go to the website, ideaday.net, and join one of the Idea Nights. There's a lot of locations all across the country, and you're going to have a great time. Not a big event, as you know. They're not going to be 50, 70 people. You're probably going to show up, and there'll be 10 to 15 at each one of these events. You're going to have a great time at one of those. That's the Idea Night coming up August the 20th. After that, it's just right around the corner. We've got Idea Day West right here in Vegas. Then we've got Idea Day Revitalize coming in April there in Tennessee. And then Idea Day East coming to New Jersey in October. So
when is Idea Day West?
Idea Day West is going to be January
28th.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, cool.
Yeah, 27th and 28th, I think, that Monday night and Tuesday night, which is kind of cool. The people that are going to be speaking at those, which we're excited about. So, yeah, all of those are going to be a lot of fun.
Good, good. Let me just talk about the theological roundtable. I mean, this is up my alley. This is my thing. I had mentioned to you when I first came on staff, because you had asked the question, hey, what would get, because I had pastored in Florida for several years.
Yeah.
And you asked me the question, hey, what would get more of guys like you and your friends?
Yeah, yeah.
And I basically said, well, you know, if we had theological discussions to go along with the methodological discussions, then I would do it. And so immediately that was implemented, and it's been a lot of fun. Some of the first ones that we had, which kind of relate to the discussion that we're having right now about things that didn't make the cut. One of the first ones was we talked about law and gospel.
Yes.
You remember that one?
Yeah,
and
good.
How, all right, what is our relationship to the law? There's individuals that you know, have a different view of what our relationship is to the law now because of the gospel. And there's some that would have a lesser view on what our relationship is and why we have the law and the purpose of it now that we have grace and all of those things. And so that's kind of the heart of the discussion.
And the question that we came up to is, where do you go to have that discussion? Where do you go to have that discussion where you can have multiple people around the table who see it differently?
Mm-hmm.
And then become either more convinced in your position, or you're able to see the scripture and say, you know what, I kind of see what they're saying mm-hmm. there. Fascinating. What were some of the other ones that we had discussions about?
One was church government. The Sunday morning service. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Is it for the believer or the unbeliever?
Yeah, that was a great conversation, right?
Because is it evangelistic or is it
That's going to affect your... That's really a philosophy that's mm-hmm. going to really affect your methodology. What you do on Sunday morning, if it's believed to be primarily for the believer, you're going to structure your church in such a way. We have good friends who do just that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other churches that are going to be more attractional in nature, like ours. Matt wouldn't mind. Matt Lyon, by the way, thank you so much for contributing to, I don't think we thanked him in the last episode.
Oh, thanks, but, Matt.
For contributing to this and episode 36, The Confession. But Matt Lyon would see very much that Sunday morning would be for the believer
mm-hmm.
and for the Christian. They would structure their services such a way. We would say that Sunday morning, we really structure it for, we're attractional in nature, right? Mm-hmm. We'd attract a lot of unbelievers and then give the gospel and attempt to really teach and preach the word of God to our people, but it would be a different methodology. How in the world could we be friends? How in the world can we still sit at the same roundtable discussion at a conference and not pretend to agree with each mm-hmm. other on everything? And that really is one of the key aspects of what I think makes Idea Day unique and fun.
Yeah, it's really cool. I am the type of person who I'm all about having as many perspectives as I possibly can,
mm-hmm.
right? And one of the things that I love about being here on staff at this church is, yeah, you and I, our goal and our mission is the same. It's reaching the lost with the gospel.
Right.
But at the same time, a Matt Lyon and I would be more similar in our understanding of the corporate church service, and it's more of disciple. It's more of a deep, and so now being here, I understand the attractional
method
reasons
more, yeah.
behind why we do what we do, and it's just seeing these things this way. That's the heart of the Idea Day Network.
It really is. It allows you to say, you know what, I know where I stand, but now I can see where somebody else
exactly.
stands.
Exactly.
Understand what their motivation is and what's going on in their heart,
mm-hmm.
and then you begin to appreciate the broader Church of God a little bit more, the family of God a little bit more. A little bit more the way I think the Lord would see us in different ways. But that's all predicated upon the episode from 2 weeks ago or two times ago, and that is there are fundamental things that we are not going to budge on
mm-hmm.
that we all are in agreement upon.
Yeah.
So let's jump into that first doctrine that didn't make the cut. Let's talk about eschatology. From the previous episode, there were people who said, oh my goodness, you didn't mention the rapture. You didn't mention the millennium. You didn't mention the seventh trumpet judgment. What do you think the seventh trumpet judgment is? Who is Apollyon? did Tim LaHaye agree to this? You know, and so, well, that's where we would say there is a lot of different beliefs mm-hmm. on eschatology. And the rapture, the millennium, didn't make the cut. Why not?
Because it's one of those things that, to be quite honest with you, any serious Bible student would have to just resign to the fact that Scripture doesn't give an absolute, clear-cut explanation of which one we should hold to.
Another way to say it is, a way I would say it is, any serious Bible student that has grace would understand that there are incredible Christian theologians out there that would differ on mm-hmm. some of these things. These are fundamental, believing, orthodox, godly, brilliant people that just would see these things differently. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to have a network of churches that get together for the purpose of sharing ideas and fellowship and planting churches and revitalizing and all of these things, then maybe we don't have to cut out everybody who doesn't see a pre-tribulational rapture point of view.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the whole focal point is, as we mentioned at the end of the last episode, is we need to understand and we need to be unified on the fact that Jesus is coming back.
Yes.
And there's either heaven to gain or there's hell to endure for right. all of eternity. And so therefore, the goal of this entire network, the goal of every pastor that will be here should be focused on not when it's going to happen or in what form, but reaching the lost before these things actually take
place.
Now
it's time to give the people what they want. And what they want is they want to know where you and I differ or stand on these things. So let's talk through that. Here, I'll tell you where I'm at. I am a traditional dispensationalist, if you can be one, because that tradition goes back only so far.
So, maybe 150 years or so, but,
so
you know.
I'll put
that's when people really got smart.
Correct. It's when the
cumulative... Wow, chronological snobbery. Wow.
I'm glad you appreciate that.
The cumulative knowledge of evangelical fundamentalists, whatever you want to call us, have come to the point where we say, hey, wait a second. And so I make fun and I mock for the sake of self-deprecation, I suppose. But I am a traditional dispensationalist. I believe in a rapture. I believe in a rapture prior to a 7-year tribulation period.
So you don't agree with the doctrine according to Kirk Cameron. That's what you're saying.
The doctrine's according to Kirk Cameron. No, but the doctrine
is Kirk Cameron not a pre-trib guy?
I mean, Left Behind is
right.
Kind of opposed to that whole idea.
Is Kirk Cameron involved in all that?
Kirk Cameron was in the first Left Behind movie.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he was in the first Left Behind movie. Yeah. No,
so
can
you call yourself a Christian?
No.
I do.
So no, I'm kind of a Lehiite in that way. I really would be. Or a Clarence Larkinite. So not that everything I see in there, especially the pyramid scheme, that's a little odd. I don't know
what that means either.
Sorry, guys. Obscure reference.
Okay.
But
someone out there will get it, I'm sure.
But yeah, no, I would be a traditional. So I believe in I'm a pre-millennial, pre-trib, eschatological guy. And so where you and I would differ is beginning at the rapture of the church and when that is, and then there's a tribulation period and probably all the way up to the establishment of the eternal kingdom, right? I mean, where do we differ on those things?
Yeah, pretty much exactly what you said.
Yeah.
And so, but that's the thing. We can have really good conversation because I can see your point,
yeah,
right?
Right?
Because I was once there.
Yeah.
And then I spent the last 8 years
getting
studying scripture deeper and figured out where I was actually wrong.
Right.
I'm just kidding. But anyway, no,
what is the line of theology that it would be classified as? Your eschatological view. It would be defined as
I would be referred to as someone who's more of a premillennial return of Jesus guy.
Right.
We don't really need to get into all of the reasons, but my interpretation.
But there are those who are amillennialists. That's not you. There are those who are postmillennialists. That's not you.
Right.
You're premillennial, but you don't see the specificity of all the rapture or the tribulation and the pre-trib and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just because of the understanding that I have with regard to what Paul was saying in his later epistles to Thessalonians and to Corinth and in relation to some of the teachings that Jesus taught in the Gospels. Concerning his return and those things, and you and I have had awesome conversations.
Oh yeah,
you know, concerning those, and that's what
challenging.
It is. It's a lot of fun, but it doesn't change the fundamental fact,
right,
that Jesus is coming back, and we have a job to do until that happens.
You know, one of the things that do make Idea Days a lot of fun is that you do walk away with a lot of practical ideas, but I always love every Idea Day to slip away into a theological roundtable and say, okay. Theology is what matters most, but it's not going to change my life tomorrow in the sense of I just want to go in and have a little fun for an hour.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Hear people talk about theology. And so, like, you're going in from 2 hours of assimilation this and media that and how am I going to get my website improved? And you're like, oh, my life stinks. And then you're like, oh, they're talking about the rapture, the four views of the rapture over there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going in there. And then just for an hour, you get to discuss. And I really think that might be a good one to put out there.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. That'd be a lot of fun.
Do you think there'd be enough guys that would not? I think there is. I talk with more and more guys that do not hold my... I think it's still the majority position within the circles I've come from. But what are your thoughts?
I think so, because honestly, there were a lot of guys, I shouldn't say a lot, maybe a handful of guys that I talked to at this last Idea Day Summit that we had. I met some really really neat reformed guys. You know, I met some dispensational. I mean, we have these conversations.
Oh, yeah.
And you, it's almost like you understand birds of a feather flock together type of thing, where you're drawn to people. Just somehow, it's weird how you're just somehow drawn to people who have the same theological persuasion as you.
Yeah.
And so, Drew, were you going to make a snide comment about
not
that?
Not snide. I think that's just society. Like, we're all drawn to somebody of our same belief system, right?
Right,
like, and you want to resist people who have an opposing belief.
Right, yeah.
I was looking up an F. Scott Gerald quote while you guys were talking, and, like, not that most preachers would consider themselves as an intelligent person or, like, pride themselves on that, but, like, the point he makes is that the test of a first-rate intelligence is to be able to hold two opposing beliefs at the same time and still function.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's just the fact that, like, you guys can still cooperate in a room together, not fight over everything, but you're still disagreeing.
Yeah.
That's the point.
And that's the thing I think that is important. I think for the Church of God as a whole, one of the things that is in my heart is the Church of God as a whole, especially the Western Church, United States Church, especially as we draw closer to the rapture and the tribulation period. but
you're
really
forcing your...
Yeah, I am. I could sense it. No, but I do think in these times it is incredibly important for us to be able to lay down our arms and stop fighting each other on fascinating conversations,
mm-hmm.
have those conversations, and really maintain and retain the unity that Christ bestowed upon us. But eschatology was one of those that didn't make the cut. What's another one?
What was another one? What did we talk about? Church government.
Church government right. structure. So there,
which was actually a theological roundtable that we had at a previous Idea Day not too long ago.
Yeah, that was really good. My wife sat in on that. Heather is herself a theologian, loves to study the scripture, and she sat in that, and she said it was absolutely incredibly enriching, mind-blowing. She had not made her go back and read an entire book called The Four Views of, or Three Views of Church Government, something like that. So for me, you know, we would be congregational, single elder-led would be the way we would say. But really, we practically function. Most of my friends who are plurality of elders tell me that our church actually functions very much like a plurality of elders.
Oh, sure, yeah.
In that we have what's called a pastoral lead team with myself, Fred, Jason, and Heather, where there aren't, I can't remember the last time a decision was made without going to that group. And many of those who would say, so we have a position. But we would be more in the sense of a leader among equals. It would be the concept that we would hold. But different people have different views on that.
Yeah, and that's what's so amazing about the Pauline epistles in the New Testament. He writes to so many different church bodies governed in so many different ways. In certain places, he's writing to the elders there, all right, helping them understand. All right, this is the governing body here at this church. There's different places where he's writing, like to Timothy and to Titus as the pastor of the church. So there's you know, all sorts of different models that are portrayed
that
in
are
scripture.
Already in the first in the New Testament,
sure,
in the first century.
Absolutely.
You know, I never thought about that. I really hadn't. I hadn't thought about that. Was that brought up because I wasn't in that roundtable discussion?
I don't know if it was or not.
It's a fascinating point,
it was like
though.
A year
right?
ago,
he reaches out to Timothy and says, this is what you need to do. And then he reaches out to others to say, the elders are among you. Peter says, the elders which are among you, I also exhort, who am also an elder.
Yeah.
So, man, that's fascinating. So things that didn't make the cut, why? Because if you have a different form of church government, look, what often can happen, this happens in small conferences, this happens in conferences of 10 to 20,000. And the answer is, if you don't agree with us on all of these things, well, guess what? We're going to spend the rest of our time trying to convince you of those things, or you're not welcome.
Yeah.
And what Idea Day Network says is, here are the fundamentals. This is where we're in agreement on. But these other things, let's talk about it. Let's have a place where young and old can gather together and discuss these things.
Yeah, when you're constantly comparing, there's no you can't cooperate with someone and effectively do the job that God has called us to do.
Yeah.
When we're comparing and trying to you know, get a foothold and figure out exactly who's right and who's wrong, when we're able to have the conversation that, hey, this is something that's up for interpretation, and if that's what you do and that's what works well for your church, then do it to the glory of God. Yep. I think that's the important thing.
Yep. Well, okay, here's another one. Bible versions. Bible versions did not. Now, for some of our audiences, our audience continues to grow. You say, really, is that an issue? It is an issue in some circles. In fact, from our past, some of the circles that we ran with and continue to do, Bible versions becomes very important. Now, before we go forward, I want to be very clear. I'm not going to make fun of anybody's position as we go forward with this, because this is a theological position where you could, of right, make fun of my pre-tribulational rapture point of view. And I would say, no, I believe that is what's taught. I believe that with a clear conscience. So there's no mockery here, but what we are saying is if you have a differing view on textual issues, we allow for that difference within our confession, because we don't believe it's fundamental to the faith, nor do we believe it's a matter of separation.
Yeah, and that's so important, because that opens the door to be involved with so many different ministries that are doing so many amazing things that will impact the kingdom.
Yeah.
You know, so, because, you know, again, going back to the circles that we probably had originally come from, you know, if you weren't of the same translation persuasion, then you were immediately cut off and even in some instances labeled as a heretic. And you were missing out on taking part of something that was really impactful. And, you know, so with me, this is a thing. It's never really been that much of an issue. I know which versions I like, and the reasons why. And it goes back to what we had discussed last time. There's no concrete, absolute, 100%, this is what you must do concerning this thing. And Bible versions is just another aspect of that.
Typically what I've seen, whenever you do get to a point where something that is not clearly taught in Scripture becomes a fundamental doctrine to the point of separating and refusing to work with others to advance the kingdom of Christ. A lot of times, that really you can trace that back and ask the question, why? Why denominationally? What power structure was taking place? What power struggles were taking place? What was happening where eschatology became at the 20th century such a dividing point for so many people? What was going on with the Bible version issue, and where did that come from, and why? And so it is fascinating to be able to say, okay, we do have to ask the question. Look at all that God is doing around this country and around the world. And we have to then ask a very serious question. There are those who would say, any work that is called a work of God that is not using my particular favorite translation, they are not doing the work of God. In fact, they are doing the work of Satan. And by the way, there are people that hold that position, and it's an intellectually honest position. I think it's wrong, but that's the position they would hold. But if you sit back and say, no, I have my preferred Bible version, and I have some good, solid historical reasons why it's my preferred Bible version, but I don't see those who don't use my Bible version. I see them as of God, just not of, I'm not saying they're of the devil. They just have a different Bible. Then that's great. You've already begun to realize that if you can be involved or work with those people, you can be involved with a broader work of God around the world.
Yeah.
And I think it's very few people who would consider anathema, that is literally cursed by God, someone who didn't use the exact same Bible version as them. I think that is a limited group of people. But if you say, I have a preferred Bible version, that's fantastic. You should have, and you should have solid reasons why.
Right, yeah.
You should have really deep reasons why. I really like and trust this Bible version. Fantastic. But it doesn't mean you have to put that in every confession and statement of faith, or be a moniker at every conference you hold.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's important for us to understand exactly why the Bible was given in the first place.
Yeah.
Right? It was to grow in our knowledge of God, right? And as far as I'm concerned, every translation that I have read and will hold to has helped me to do that, right? And so even though where it comes from is up for debate and all of these different things, it's accomplished in my life what I believe God has wanted it to accomplish. I remember... It's so funny. In my younger days, when I first became a Christian and was very, not ashamed or afraid to say I was naive at a lot of things concerning the faith and Christian practice and one of those, there was a particular version of the Bible that I held very closely to, just because I was told that that was the only one that you could hold to. And then I met my dear sweet wife, who had been saved years before I was, and was a much more thorough student of the word than I was. And I found out that she had been raised on a version that was different than mine.
Right.
And I thought to myself, how can this be? And immediately it opened my mind to understand this is what the Bible is actually for. And if we have differing versions, that's okay, as long as it's accomplishing what God intends
It's funny you bring that up. This is not the first time I've heard of this. I've counseled couples on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
I just was speaking with a friend who is going through a very similar issue. Their daughter is dating a young man who is very concerned, very, very concerned that she's not using the same Bible version, to the point that he's not sure, like, if this is everything's going to be okay. And it's because he's only been taught a very narrow view of bibliology. I'm trying to rephrase in such a way to be conciliatory. But I would say if your view of bibliology is that somebody should not marry somebody who uses a different version of the Bible, I would say that you have a very narrow view of bibliology.
Right,
I apologize. But regardless, the father who uses a different version said, "Man, what am I gonna do with that?" What I've come to experience is the young man will grow in his understanding, like you did, and he'll chill out and realize, okay, what does the Bible actually teach? But these kind of things, they don't need to be in a confession
for
a network of churches that are getting together to share ideas and to plant churches and to have a conference. And no, these are things that you can decide for either your local church. Or even if you don't want to make it for your local church, you can have it as your personal preference or belief system.
And that's why, because if we put certain things in here like this that I held very close to, but you didn't, that's immediately going to cut off, you know, relationship and fellowship with another individual that very possibly has a deeper, more intimate knowledge of God than I would, that I need to gain from their perspective.
Precisely. And it runs counter to what Jesus prayed when his high priestly prayer with the Father, that they would be unified, that they would be under one, that the world may know that you sent me, he prays.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's very interesting. Well, there's another aspect of this, and then we'll just kind of close out, and that is theology, philosophy, and methodology. One of the things we did not add, one of the things that did not make the cut, is a focus on philosophy or methodology. You say, well, of course not. This is a doctrinal statement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it is amazing to me how philosophy of ministry and even methodology finds its way into doctrinal statements. Look, we could not allow that. A doctrinal statement or a confession is that it's theology. Mm-hmm. And at Idea Day, not only are we wanting to have moments where we can discuss theology, like literally, we'll talk about, as long as it's not the fundamentals that we talk, we're not discussing the virgin birth here. We're okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about theology. We'll even talk about that. Well, then let alone we'll talk about philosophy, of course. Of course we'll talk about methodology. But as to your point earlier, Chris, when Idea Day expanded and went from only having methodological discussions, and I remember that very, very important conversation with you, It was, you know, there's a whole nother group of pastors out there that are very interested in not just how to assimilate 10 more people into my Sunday school class, or what's the newest app I can get for our giving. Those are important. And that's really a bedrock. We talk a lot about methods and ideas and that kind of stuff at Idea Day. But ideas are not just methodological. Ideas are philosophical. Ideas are theological.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted to open that table or open that conversation. And if we were going to open that conversation, it leads us back to our original question, why make a confession? And the answer is because there are some things on the table. There are some things that are not on the table for discussion, mm-hmm. and that is our confession.
Yep.
So, Drew, you're kind of quiet over there.
I am quiet. Clearly, this is not over the overflow for me.
But you contributed just a bit.
I try.
Throughout.
So where can people go to find more about this confession if they want to muse it over themselves and find out what we truly left out and what we left in?
Yeah, you can go right to the Idea Day website. Go to ideaday.net, and you can download it there, walk through each detail, and then scribble out what you don't like.
Can we welcome continued conversation? Like if people want to say,
yeah,
hey, this is something that, you know, is important but wasn't touched on or something that people could have a good conversation about. Do we want to go down that road?
Yeah, man. absolutely.
That's what we're all about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We want to find out. In fact, we would love to know. You say, man, you talk about those theological roundtables. I'd love to be part of one of those. What if we had a theological roundtable about this or that? You can email Chris at chris@southernhillslv.com. And Chris is at these Idea Days, and we'd love to add that and continue the conversation. You can email me, email Chris anytime, and we'll be able to do, maybe we'll do a theological Q&A. We do a lot of, we've done Q&A episodes before.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
Maybe from these two episodes, you'd like to do a theological Q&A. Send us your, email those questions to chris@southernhillslv.com, and he'll get a list of those together, and maybe a couple months from now, we'll do an episode of that. But man, love this episode. Thanks for listening. Next episode that we've got coming up is episode number
39.
We are two away from 40, which is pretty amazing.
It's going to be amazing. Thanks for being our guest.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
All right, buddy. We're out.
Thanks so much for listening to today's Idea Talks. If you've benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.